Hello, beautiful souls. I'm so positively delighted that you could join us on the Learn to Love podcast. I am your host, Zach Beach, and I'm excited to introduce our guests for today's episode, Dr. Michael and Dr. Barbara Grossman. The Grossmans were on the show for episode 105 on the topic of ageless love. And it was such a joy to have them come back onto the show to talk about falling in love forever. Barbara Grossman is an individual marriage and family therapist with over 60,000 hours of counseling experience integrating spirituality and psychology. She is an expert in teaching practical skills to couples to create a fulfilling romantic partnership. Dr. Michael Grossman is a fellow of the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine and specializes in anti-aging regenerative medicine using bioidentical hormone replacement and stem cells to assist men and women in reversing the effects of aging. It was such a joy to have them both on the show, but I have to apologize in advance that the audio on the Grossman's end isn't the best. But they both contain such a wealth of information, it was worth posting and sharing with you all. I tried my absolute best to clean the audio up and hope you get tons of useful information from this interview because they are both just waterfalls of wisdom on what it means to lead happy and loving relationships. So without further ado, let's start the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Learn to Love podcast. Your guide to everything love, sex, intimacy, and relationships. Each week, your host, Zach Beach, interviews new experts on love, including couples therapists, relationship coaches, sex educators, and best-selling authors. Learn the best tips and cutting-edge wisdom to better love yourself, others, and the world. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show.
All right. Hello, Dr. Michael Grossman and Dr. Barbara Grossman. Thank you so much for coming back onto the show. How are we doing today?
Excellent. Yes, indeed.
Well, thank you so much. I enjoyed our first interview and was so excited to have you back on the show because you have a new book that we are here to talk about. And our topic for today is on falling in love forever. So I got to ask, I'm sure you too get this question all the time. You've been together for a very long time and you even work together. So I assume you're not sick of each other yet. But of course, I got to ask, you know, do you still find yourself falling in love with each other?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's peculiar. My wife thinks that I walk on water. And she tells me every day, five times a day, how much she loves me. And I love it. And I say, you can't tell me enough how happy you are. Makes me so happy to know that she's in love and she's happy and so on. Yeah, it gets more intense over time, which is lovely. And you have bumps along the way and you got to deal with those bumps that happen. And when you deal with them, then you can appreciate each other even more because they help to heal those little upsets that have occurred.
I love that. It's almost like a prescription. Say you love your partner every day, five times a day.
It is one of the prescriptions. And also to make requests of each other. Oh, it really make me happy if, and then you say what it is. And then you get that behavior. So I tell my wife that, oh, it makes me so happy when you tell me you love me. And so it's great.
You know, Michael essentially is the same man he was when I met him, when I was 19 years old, but he's evolved over time. So it's not like I'm like a static relationship. He's developed and, you know, a lot of things that were just potential kernels of possibility have unfolded. And so, you know, I'm constantly in relationship with a, you know, a different expression of his personality. So it's always fresh. And I don't believe I'm the same person either. I've been developing different interests and capacities over time. So it's not ever stale.
That's wonderful. That's what I've been thinking about lately, just the important role that curiosity can play in our lives, being curious just about what is this day going to bring to remaining curious about our partner, even though we might think we know them. There's always more things to discover.
And we develop over time if we're conscious. When we were young, I'd say, I was attracted to Michael because of his interests. There was a lot of affinity in our interests. And he was enthusiastic, but I don't know that he had a vocabulary for feeling so much as he has developed since, his late 30s or 40s. And what a boon to the relationship to have a man express feelings. And we women, if we're committed to relationship, the pressure comes for us to learn how to share our feelings rationally and not dramatically. And so we don't stay the same, and that makes things fun.
Do you even feel like now you're still learning, still growing, still developing?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I find that is so crucial in relationships to always have that growth mindset, to realize there's going to be bumps in the road and you can repair that conflict and be stronger than you were before.
And follow your spirit to develop your interests.
It's true. You do say in your bio that you, Barbara, like to integrate the spirituality and the psychology in people's growth and healing. And I'm curious, for example, when you say follow your spirit, what does that look like?
I don't know even if that's a spiritual statement, but it's, your temperament, personality, and life experience unfolds different interests over time. If you would ask me when I was 25, if I would be, a competitive ballroom dancer, I wouldn't have thought that. I played basketball in college, but, I have this whole new chapter of life competing in ballroom dancing all over the country. What a cool development that is. Just following my spirit. And why would I be interested in dance? Well, my grandmother was a Latin dancer and competed. And so I had it in my storage of memories. And I enjoy it. Music is fantastic. But I would not have predicted that.
So I would love to begin our conversation today just talking about falling in love at first, and then we can think about what it might look like to fall in love forever, because it's almost like a cliche, even this idea of love can seem too like mushy for some folks. And just a few centuries ago, people didn't marry for love. People didn't base a lifelong partnership on love. And people at the time did think it was fairly silly to base a lifelong partnership on such an amorphous and temporary, potentially, feeling of love versus like the duty and responsibility of like two families joining together because their farms are next to each other. So do you feel that love and love alone and that you are falling madly in love together is a proper foundation for a lasting relationship?
Well, that is a very deep question and a very important question. And you're exactly right that three centuries ago, people were not marrying for love. That it was a very practical thing. You were 15 years old and you're going to get married because you're going to probably be dead when you're 40. There's no social security. Your kids are your social security. They're going to support you when you're getting older and you can't work like you used to. They're going to help you in whatever you're doing to stay alive. And so that was a different time. And little by little, the idea of marrying for love developed. It came from the troubadours who were in the 1200s who had unrequited love. The knight would love the woman. But it was unrequited. You weren't getting married. You weren't having sex with them. You were just love. They were your ideal, and that went on for a century. And then little by little, that quality of love began to take more root, and people began to feel like falling in love was very important. Over time, people begin to marry more for love instead of just having a parent or a matchmaker come and say, this is going to be your spouse for life. And you just said, okay. You then had a situation where now you're marrying for love and you have to fall in love first. And if you don't fall in love, you're not going to get married because you don't have to get married now because women can work, men can work. There's no need to get married. You don't have to have children to support you when you get old. You can get Social Security. You don't need the kids. It's a different situation. Falling in love now is a necessary prerequisite for getting married for most people, and it's not sufficient. You have common interests, common social situations. Dr. Barbara sees her clients all the time who come from different cultures, different parts of the world to get married. It's really conflicted. Your parents should live with you, and you have to take care of your parents. And other cultures say, absolutely, you got to live on your own. Your parents shouldn't run your life. There's a lot of complexities. You need, when you're thinking of getting married, to think out clearly what you want. Do you want children? Where do you want to live? How are you going to deal with parents? You have to have a lot of things worked out ahead of time, or else there's going to be a crash and a big upset because you didn't think it out ahead of time. You need to have an intellectual guideline behind your decision about should I get married or not. And Dr. Barber has a whole practice of how you find someone to get married to, and it doesn't involve just falling in love. That's fine, but before you commit, before you spend more than 3 to 5 visits dating, you then ask all these important questions. And if they don't want kids, and if they don't want to live where you live, and if they don't want to work in a way where either one is working or one doesn't work or one is working or whatever, if you haven't decided that and made logical sense of it, don't have a 10-year relationship. That's going to be a disaster.
No, that was my follow-up question. I was going to be like, when would you want to have this conversation? And then you kind of answered it towards the end. You were like, very early on.
So I believe that young people should date a lot and use dates as an interview. And you learn about yourself. You know, you need to, couples need to have certain affinities. You need to have a temperament that's similar, doesn't have to be the same, but similar. And you have to have common values. And you learn how to talk and interview by having lots of dates. I tell my either men or women, whoever is single, to date at least 3 people at all times.
Simultaneously.
Yes, so that, you know, you don't get attached to any one person, and you ask a lot of questions, and you know, when you sense that someone can be really nice but not for you, they go by the wayside. This generation does not date. They bond, attach, they have sex. They don't really have lots of good conversation. You know, it's an important skill set to have, to be able to, you know, learn about each other and see if there's enough affinities to build a relationship on, so that over a finite amount of time, you can rule out and become clear about who's a proper partner for you.
Once you find who could be the proper partner with the 3 dates, they then say, I'd like to have a one-on-one relationship. I want a committed relationship. And you think out, is this person right for you? If they are, then you drop the other 2 and you're just having a one-to-one relationship. And then you're soon going to make a commitment. If that partner is right for you, you're going to make a commitment to be together and to be married. And it's not going to go on for 3 or 4 years. It's going to be a short commitment. Then you know, this is what I want.
I mean, one thing I'm hearing from you is that we do need this integration of the head and the heart, is that the heart is going to be that part of you that wants to just fall immediately madly in love with somebody, but there needs to be some conversation, some logic, some compatibility also in the mind along the same values and kind of life paths that you want to bring. Let these two work hand in hand.
Right. You need to have the heart there where you feel like, wow, I really could love this person. They're really a match for me emotionally. And then you've got to have the intellect there. So you've got to have both together.
I think actually historically, parents would look to see if those values were similar in the 2 families when they brought together the 2 families where there'd be a partner for their child. They would look to see if there's values and good habits, life habits in common. We're a culture of individuality. We want to do that ourselves. But we need to do that and not just depend on sexual chemistry.
Yeah, you basically answered one of the questions I was thinking of, which is many people do feel like they fall for the wrong person or that they fall in love too fast. They're just like, once I find a person I connect with, I just lose myself and make big life changes and it all kind of blows up. And so I was thinking, like, do we want to be hesitant to fall in love? And that's is essentially what I'm sort of hearing from you is like, yes, don't go too quickly into the commitment, love, falling in love stage. Stay a little bit longer in the dating, the trying out stage, even dating multiple people.
So, you know, we have to take responsibility for that process. I'm in a different generation than probably your viewers. And my growing up years, the culture was different. I started going to school dances in sixth grade and dancing with different guys and meeting different guys and having parties and socials and proms and high school dances. And by the time I met Michael, I might have had maybe 5 or 6 boyfriends. And so it was, you know, having experience like that, you kind of know what works. You've learned, you know, really some of the hard ways, but you don't learn as hard as it is when you learn at 25 and you have a baby in common. It's, you know, and so that, you know, developing skills for connection and learning about people and getting close to people starting a younger age builds our, you know, intelligence information about what we want and don't want, so that when we arrive at 20 or 25, we know what works for us. Frankly, it doesn't work to wait that much longer, because you don't want to have babies when you're old. You want to, you know yourself and know what you want sooner. So it's good to have that learning process start early when the stakes are not so high.
If you feel like you meet someone and you just love them and you met them once or twice and you're just so in love with them, that's fine. Then you want to ask the questions. Hey, I want to be married. I want to have kids. I want these many kids. I don't want to work full time as a woman, or I do want to work full time, have a career, and I want to live near my parents, and I want to be in this area or do this or do that. You want to ask all these questions of each other, and you don't commit to a long-term relationship without seeing the big picture. And I think that's very important for today's generation.
My version of those questions is, what's your philosophy of life? What's important to you? How do you want to use your time in your life? What will have you satisfied by life? You know, what are your interests and talents and hobbies? You'd want to know the person's worldview. There's so many things to learn about a person to know if there's compatibility.
I mean, these are important questions you've got to ask ahead of time.
It's true. And I guess I'm wondering two things. Like, one, I assume there needs to be some flexibility, right? I'm going to be like, I want 2 kids and to live in this town and for you to be making this much money. But also, what might we do if we don't know, right? I'm not sure how I want to celebrate the holidays or what religion.
If neither of you care, that's good. If one of you has strong opinions about religion and the other one has strong opinions about some other, you want to know ahead of time.
And it doesn't always mean that you have to be the same. When I met Michael, you know, I'm much a more traditional person when it comes to religion. And Michael was into the Eastern meditation and having a spiritual teacher who was, you know, esoteric. And I found that fascinating. And the more I heard what he was interested in, I saw how it was a different language for what traditional religion is about. And it was a fun exploration. It actually brought a lot of richness to my experience. So it's not like you have to have a ditto, you know, a carbon copy of yourself. But can you, does your thinking and your interests have enough affinities that you can share a life together?
Because I think that is a really beautiful thing when our partner does widen our world a bit, like widen our perspective and encourage us to see the world in a different way. So let's talk about, those feelings. Let's say we've had the conversations. Okay, we're good. Now we feel ourselves falling in love. What's happening in the brain, in the body, in this phenomenon that we do call falling in love?
So part of falling in love is physiological, that you get changes in chemistry, all kinds of brain chemistry changes and hormonal changes that bring out the feeling of love. And these are real chemicals. And falling in love is very, very healthy. It brings all kinds of health benefits. But it doesn't stay automatically forever like that. You have a family, you have a job and a career, and there's all kinds of different things going on. And whoever you are in their 20s, you'll be a different person in your 30s and 40s. And when that change happens, you have to negotiate those changes. You and your partner will have changed a lot. And it's like making a new relationship. So when you're going to be dead when you're 40, it's not a problem. Barbara and I married 51 years. And who I am when I'm 40 was very different than 20. I had to learn to feel my emotional state, the feelings. I had to learn to express feelings and to feel them. And Barbara wasn't, she wanted me to be a more feeling-oriented person. And it was a big, big emotional exploration. And Barbara changed from just being so accepting whatever I wanted. She was so cooperative the first 10 years of our marriage. And it was great. I loved that. But then it changed. And then she had her own idea. She's back in graduate school. She's thinking for herself. She's learning to think for herself and to have her own world perspective and not just rely on me. And that put a lot of pressure on me and a pressure on our relationship. And that kind of thing is inevitable in a long-term marriage. You're both going to change a lot and not necessarily at the same time. The changes are going to happen. And we teach that in our classes when we run our Falling in Love Forever classes. You've got to have the skills to learn how to listen to each other and to make requests of each other. And that's not an easy thing to do because it puts a lot of pressure on each of you to share yourselves and to understand why you become so different than who you were 10 years ago.
Wow, it's so interesting that you have such a long-term perspective. You've seen so many changes and transformations over many decades. And hearing you talk about growth and change does remind me of a common concern, almost complaint I hear, because I am very steeped in like the self-growth and healing world and have this podcast. And what often comes up is one partner has been really committed to their own growth and transformation, and the other one seems relatively stagnant. And then the person doing the healing and growth doesn't feel like they're keeping up, and they're almost feeling like they're outgrowing the relationship. So would you say it's normal for that to happen and go find somebody else? Or do we want to stay with it and kind of bring the other person along?
Well, that's the big question. And, you know, the partner who's growing needs to challenge the partner who's reticent. I believe that relationships is the best psychotherapy going, because you will hit all the bumps and the injuries of your history with your parents and just general experience growing up. You'll hit those walls with your partner, and you'll need to go inside and reflect on them and resolve those feelings. And your partner does the same with you. And the feedback you get from each other is priceless. You'd need 10 years in therapy to get to that level of connecting with your childhood experience. And you get to heal it if you know how to talk to each other. That's the best route to your personal evolution. And if you're the reticent partner who's not willing to share, you know, the partner who's at the forefront of that, you know, needs to create invitations that are welcoming, that aren't scary. It's not about right or wrong. It's about healing and about learning about yourself and about growing as a partnership.
I love it. So much profundity and some very simple sentences. You mentioned you can heal it, meaning any problem in your relationship, if you know how to talk to each other. It's so simple. And I also like how you did say we want to make invitations that are welcoming and not scary, because that's another little trap. You might want to create like an ultimatum, like I am growing so much, and if you don't, like it's over. That's very scary and frightening to have that kind of threat from somebody.
I just read some research about how, you know, it really takes to the, you know, to your 60th year to really develop as a mature personality. And some of the things you have to learn over time, and it takes time. There is a certain development that takes time. And we need to learn empathy, and we also need to learn self-regulation. Most of us, when we have a thought or a feeling that's uncomfortable, it's so easy to go to anger. That simply is not effective. And to regulate yourself means to go underneath the anger and share the reflected feelings, the deeper feelings. And, you know, when I see people who start with me in therapy, they're usually dramatizing their feelings, and it simply doesn't work. And it takes a long time to learn about yourself and be able to express yourself calmly and reflectively. And, you know, if you have good ingredients in your relationship can grow and develop you like that. And it takes time and practice. And there's lots of opportunities to practice, because life throws at us all kinds of challenges, the things we have to talk about, our parents, our children, our work, our money, our relationship to community, politics, whatever. There's so many things to talk about. And you have a partner in conversations to learn that in, and to have reactions and to blow up and be self-righteous and angry doesn't cut it.
And what we do in our marriage classes, the Falling in Love Forever classes, we teach the couples a skill. It's kind of like learning how to ice skate. You don't learn it like right away. You have to do it regularly and practice it and get skilled in it. But to listen without interrupting And the purpose of listening is not to win an argument. Rather, purpose of listening is to understand, hey, there's another way to see the world, so let's listen to it. And each partner learns to do that, to listen to their partner, just seeing, wow, you see the world in that way. Wow, that's like unbelievable. It's hard to imagine seeing the world that way. And you learn to share it with each other in this way, and that opens you up to see everything in it from a bigger perspective, where it presses you to grow. And it's easy to fall in love with somebody who's different than you, but not attacking you. And if you're exactly the same, it gets boring. Then you're in two lawyers being married together, or two accountants. There's no juice there. There's no romance there. And you find someone else to be romantically involved with. Rather, this is who you're romantically involved with. It's not meant to be like you see everything the same way. The reason why you fall in love, we didn't talk about it, but the reason why you fall in love with someone is that part of you sees this person can heal all the hurts that I had growing up, and they could heal me. You don't think it consciously. It just happens, and that's why you are, quote, falling in love. That's what it does for you. And as you grow in your relationships, that is what unfolds consciously. You realize that Barbara has her weaknesses, and I can heal them. And she asked me nicely to heal her weaknesses where she feels insecure because she lost her dad when she was 2, never saw him again. And I can heal that in her. And she can heal in me because my mother was always criticizing me, never could do a good enough job. And if she can just tell me how great I am, wow, I love this. And so we heal each other. And so that's where love unfolds over a lifetime.
So I really love your emphasis on communication. And one of the things I'm hearing is the importance of empathy and self-regulation. And that when we are able to regulate ourselves in conversation, even difficult conversations, then we can do that very challenging technique of listening without interrupting, which is so much easier said than done because we do get emotionally charged and unable to listen.
It takes a lot of practice. You also become aware that none of us is perfect. You have to, understand our own weaknesses, whereas we'd want to grow in, but we're not yet there. And so that we can understand when our partner observes that we're doing this that hurts them, that's, probably true and we're responsible for that. And so we do need to be able to reflect on ourselves and understand, see ourselves from another person's point of view.
That's so interesting, Michael, when you said that the reason you fell in love is because part of you unconsciously feels that this person can heal all of your wounds. My first thought was, uh-oh. Meaning you're going into a relationship thinking, expecting somebody to fully heal all of your stuff. But it was interesting, you flipped it in a very more positive light, basically saying that your partner can answer the call. Once they have a willingness to help you out in those wounds, it can be extraordinarily healing and helpful.
Yeah, that's right. It can be. There are two ways to get spiritually enlightened, generally. One is you have a guru and you submit yourself totally to the guru, and the guru will send you on all kinds of weird errands to do, all kinds of things to do. And I have seen that in person, and it's really intense. It's not easy and simple. Yet you can grow enormously. And that's one way of getting spiritually enlightened. The other way is to be married and you submit yourself to the marriage. And it's not something that you were consciously aware of that it would cause that kind of growth to occur, but it's inevitable that it does. By the nature of why you're falling in love, you want to be healed of all your stuff because your partner just attracts you so much. And yet at the same time, it will cause you over time to grow in all kinds of ways. Those are the two technologies, opportunities for spiritual growth. It's hard to spiritually grow without one or the other of those processes.
So I'd want to break down what Michael said a little in more detail. Yeah, I am an accommodating, empathic kind of person. That's who Michael founded me. And we have a lot of intellectual interests in common. So we have a lot of affinities. And I was like that for quite a while until, my life developed me in a certain direction where I had more desires for more you know, I wanted to challenge Michael. He was going very Eastern and I'm a Western girl. And so, you know, I came across to Michael at a certain point as not that accommodating, but challenging. And Michael was shocked. And we had a couple of very difficult years because, you know, we don't stay the same. And I wouldn't be a real person if I was just accommodating. So Michael had to help me understand how important it is for me to tell him what I'm thinking and what I want in calm, rational conversation. And I had to learn to ask him for not just abstractions for what I want, but specific behaviors that I want that would help me feel closer to him. As a, you know, man in business who works a lot, he was very, you know, goal-oriented, and he lost touch with his feelings and his, you know, his passion for just ordinary living. He was, you know, living a very intellectual and business kind of life. And so these are course corrections. But if you know how to navigate through that period, there's a lot of really rich feedback in that, and you make adjustments and you reconnect on a new level. And it's important to interpret the challenges you have properly. It's an invitation to grow, and it's inevitable, and you'll have them. You know, I think the challenge in your 30s and 40s is probably the hardest challenge, when you really become two very independent entities. If you can learn to talk to each other and give and receive what you each need, then you are opening up to a whole new chapter of life.
It's so interesting to hear how you both really know what the other one's stuff is. And I think about how challenging it is to create that kind of safe space in a relationship. So for example, if I'm telling my partner, hey, I feel like you're not that in touch with your emotions, they might be like, well, I think, or they immediately get defensive or deny it, like all the ways that we kind of avoid the necessary work that we have to do. And do you feel that there is a way to cultivate that kind of level of safety and security in relationships so that when our partner does point out our weaknesses or blind spots or work that needs to be done, that we can actually hear it instead of just, you know, letting it create conflict?
Again, it's a learning curve, but instead of, you know, critiquing your partner, you're not your partner's therapist, obviously. You know, you want to say, you know, I feel lonely. I feel really alone in this relationship. And I want you to understand that I miss you and I want to spend more time with you. And I'd like, you know, us to be relaxed together and reflect and I miss that about us. Can you do that for me? That would really make me happy.
So I statements.
It's sharing feelings. It's not attacking. It's not criticizing.
That's wonderful advice too. Share your feelings. Don't attack or criticize. And it reminds me of one of your kind of love prescriptions that you write in your book. So you have some really great love prescriptions, you call them, including the importance of listening without interrupting. And another one you have is to make appointments for those real conversations with your partner. And another one is to give up your complaints. So in your book, you write, recognize that you have complaints that limit your life, and realize you need to give these up so that you can live into your magnificent future. And of course, I'm going to have some resistance to that but I have really valid complaints about my partner. I really have to give them up.
It's not like you give them up, but you have to translate them into what you want. If I were to, you know, complain about you, your natural reaction would be to defend yourself because you have good intentions. You're a good person. You're not, you know, you're committed to love and good things. If you're hurting in some way or something's missing, you want to find a way to say it in terms of, you know, a behavior or an action step you can do together that would make you happy, so that you're giving up the formulation of a complaint, but you're sharing the essence of what you want. So you're not suppressing what you want.
So one of the things we do in our marriage course, the Falling in Love Forever class, we have the couple share with each other what it was like for them growing up. And you pick the parent you had the most problem with. And you have complaints about that parent, big complaints that kind of run your life. You need to find a way to heal yourself so that you can give up those complaints. Those complaints run your life. They limit you. So I had complaints about my mom that she was too critical. And she didn't really love me in the way I needed to be loved. Tell me how great I was. She just complained all the time. I had that run my life. And then out of that sharing exercise, I could then ask Barbara, look, I'm real sensitive to criticism. Can you help me? And then I make a specific request. Could you talk to me this way? Could you not say that? Could you say this and help me and so forth? And then she can hear it where I'm not attacking her. I'm just asking for her help. So in each relationship, there are things that I complain about my past, things that she complains about her past, and she can make requests of me and I can make requests of her of how we can heal each other. And we do it consciously. And so when we get our partner on our side to heal us of our life complaints, then we can give up those complaints. So now I can just love my mother and I let go of all my complaints about her. And what that does, that's the spiritual path to enlightenment. You give up all your complaints about life. You're no longer complaining. God's presence can come into your life and you feel this tremendous love. And it comes through that marriage process where you feel that unbounded love overwhelming you with love. And that's what keeps you feeling freshly in love.
I love that. I love the importance of translating our complaints into requests and also recognizing that a complaint is a sort of resistance against the way things are. But if we want to get fully in touch with this life and our partner, then we do let go.
Yes.
Actually, complaints actually reinforce the behavior you don't want. Because, you know, a partner will just naturally defend themselves and resist the conversation. It just doesn't work. On any level.
Complaints reinforce the behavior that you don't want. So that's another way to kind of let them go, is realizing complaining about an issue is not going to solve the issue. So I'd love to tap a little bit more as we're kind of winding down about this idea of falling in love forever and keeping those feelings of passion and energy and butterflies that we tend to associate with only occurring at the beginning of a relationship. And so what are some people just say it's just a normal part of, say, maturing in a relationship or just getting older. You're just not going to have the energy and the libido that you once had.
My specialty is anti-aging medicine. I keep people youthful throughout their whole entire life. And what I do consistently is that I add natural hormones, bioidentical hormones to the individuals who are getting older. So when women go into menopause in their late 40s, early 50s, they change their hormones enormously. They don't sleep, they get irritable, they lose libido, they lose muscle stamina, they lose brain clarity, they lose their emotional evenness. And it's easy to fix that. Men is very slow. In their 50s, they start going down in testosterone, but every 10 years, it's a lot lower than it used to be. And when we add testosterone and other hormones for men, They feel youthful. Men and women can feel the same youthfulness, the same energy, the same enthusiasm, the same libido, the same enjoyment for accomplishment when they're 50, 60, 70, 80 as they did when they were 30. So that's what I do. It's a joy to do that. It works consistently. The other thing that I do is that there's all kinds of things that get in the way of sexual functioning when you get older. There are mechanical issues with the whole mechanism of being sexually excited and feeling enjoyment. And I do so many things to heal that. We do Gainswave, which is a vibrational treatment. We do platelet-rich plasma and exosomes, growth factors from umbilical cord of newborn babies. We do these treatments, and consistently, well, I say 90% of the time, we can just repair all these deficits. And being sexually active as you continue to age maintains that passion, maintains that intensity of love. Barbara and I were just 74 and 73, more or less, and I feel the same passion as I did when I was 30, and so does Barbara. Passion in terms of the intellect, the emotions, and the physiology.
There's another dimension, and that is it's important to be individuals and to keep focusing and following your natural interests. you know, Michael is such an exciting person. He's always doing something new. He's always at the cutting edge of medicine. He's and he follows his interests. He has a meditation class online. He's always doing, he keeps me excited about him all the time. I have my own interests. I've studied and I'm interested in theology, philosophy, and psychology. And I keep developing, you know, different themes I write about and talk about. And I led us into dancing because it's a lifelong dream of mine. There's ways in which we're constantly evolving our personalities, and the attraction for individual expression, I think, keeps the energy really hot. And so everyone needs to keep developing themselves in whatever way their nature, you know, presses upon them, inspires them, because that's what keeps, you know, that's how you started when you got together, as you were individuals, and you don't want to lose that individuality. That's, creates energy like that.
Yeah, what I'm hearing is that if we're passionate about our life or even just life, that same passion is going to fuel the passion in my relationship.
Yes, exactly.
So, Michael, I wouldn't mind hearing a little bit more about the work that the treatments that you are offering to people, particularly the ones that you might have found quite effective in staying young and youthful and vibrant, and kind of what it takes. Like when you said add natural hormones, I'm like, is that an injection we're talking about? Or are there basic changes to my lifestyle that I could also employ?
Well, primarily what I do is the mechanical things. Testosterone can be delivered by creams, injections. Estrogen for women is generally topical of some kind. But progesterone can be topical or capsules. We have other injections of growth hormone releasing factors. Somorolin is a peptide that releases growth hormone. That's a little baby injection. These are little teeny needles, doesn't hurt. Those are the kind of things that I do. There's other hormones that are tablets, they're different sort of things. Most of these are prescriptions. Some of them are over-the-counter, not prescription. But each person, I do tests. I do blood tests and saliva tests, and we see what's going on in their physiology. And then I know what they need. Most of the time, within a month, it's really obvious. Whoa, I feel totally different. Growth hormone is a slower factor. It takes a month or two and you dream more and sleep deeper, but then after 3-4 months you feel more energy, more muscle stamina. It's clear to Barbara and I that we could not ballroom dance competitively like we do without all this stuff. So it's a mechanical thing, but it translates into all the emotional things that Dr. Barbara talked about.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. So unfortunately we're running low on time, and I do have to finish by asking the question I ask all of my guests. So we'll do it individually. Let's ask all as Dr. Barbara first. My final question I ask all my guests is, what do you wish everyone knew about love?
Well, I'd want everyone to know how important connection is and love is, how you need to continuously reflect on what's important to you, what you value in your relationships, and to experience a lot of people through conversation and social interaction. Connection is so important. Our young people are challenged to, you know, have social skills, and you need to learn how to share yourself and talk and inquire about people and make relationships and practice with lots of people so that you learn what you want and what you don't want, so that you make good decisions in your lives, and to know that relationships grow over time. It's not static. If it is static, there's something to pay attention to. But we evolve over time. We don't stay the same. And we need to stay connected to ourselves and learn how to share ourselves so that we can keep upgrading our relationships and growing.
I love it. So much useful advice that we can all apply to our relationships. So thank you so much, Dr. Barbara Grossman, for coming on to the show. And your turn, Dr. Michael. What do you wish everyone knew about love?
So I wish that everyone knew that the most important factor medically, scientifically, in longevity after the age of 50 is the quality of your personal relationships. So from a medical doctor who teaches how to live longer and healthier, relationships are critical, and you've got to have quality relationships. And I teach people how to stay youthful from the hormonal, biochemical point of view. Critical. They can go to ocwellness.com. That's my website, ocwellness.com, and see all the different things I do mechanically to keep you young. And they can go to fallingloveforever.com and look at what we teach in relationship, practical kinds of things that we've talked about here, our classes and courses, to maintain that intimate relationship, which is critical for longevity and for health.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, both of you. Dr. Grossman's new book is Falling in Love Forever. And you kind of already answered it. I usually ask for our listeners who do want to learn more from you, how can they find you? So we have ocwellness.com, fallinginloveforever.com. Is there anything else you want to point people to?
They could go to agelesslovequiz.com, and that will guide them through the option of taking some of our courses. And we have online courses. And we also have the live Zoom courses that we do, and the Ageless Love Quiz will guide them through that. So agelesslovequiz.com would be another option.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, both of you. You're doing amazing work in the world, and I so appreciate you both coming onto the show and sharing us your decades of wisdom. You are absolutely walking the walk over here. Happy 51-year anniversary to you both, and I appreciate that you have shared this wisdom that have kept you falling in love together for so long with all of our listeners. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Wow. What an incredible interview. So much knowledge to reflect back on, including you can heal any relationship wound if you know how to talk to and communicate with your partner. Don't commit to a long-term relationship without seeing the big picture. Date a lot of people to gain experience and find the person that's right for you. There are two ways to get enlightened. One is with a guru, but the other way is to get married and submit yourself in the marriage to all the ways it pressures you to become a better person. You can translate your complaints into requests using I statements to express how you are feeling in the relationship. And yes, it is absolutely possible to fall in love with your partner forever and to have a vibrant, joyful, and yes, even sexy love life into your later years. Being passionate about your life will bring passion into your relationship. Thanks again for listening to the show, and thank you for being you. You are the love that you seek. You are lovable, loving, and loved. Take care.
Thanks again for listening to the Learn to Love podcast. To learn more about the show and your host, head over to zachbeach.com or theheartcenter.com. You can also follow Zach on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.